views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
A light shines on Lyme disease. Limelight Radio with Katina Makris is an inspirational, cutting-edge radio show educating worldwide listeners on a diversity of Lyme disease-related topics. Each week, Katina will interview some of the world's leaders in health, wellness, spirituality, and human potential to expand awareness and activate change to eliminate Lyme disease for good. Limelight Radio is a much-needed venue for the USA's number one fastest-spreading infectious illness. Katina is an award-winning author, a natural healthcare practitioner with over 30 years' experience, and most importantly, a healing force with her own personal Lyme journey. Be part of a movement to help end the suffering and confusion surrounding Lyme disease and begin to take action. Now here's your host, Katina Makris.
Then I go to my brother, and I say, brother, help me please.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Limelight Radio. It's my pleasure to host one of my favorite people in the Lyme disease community who's visited with us before on Limelight Radio. Today, we're going to speak with David Roth. So let me tell you a little bit about David to refresh you, listeners from before. And if you're new to Limelight Radio, I think you're going to really enjoy today's interview. David Roth serves as Senior Managing Director at Blackstone Real Estate Advisors. Mr. Roth runs the Latin American sector of properties, and he is co-chairman of the Global Lyme Alliance. Mr. Roth also received a JD from New York University School of Law and his undergraduate degree from Dartmouth College. Dynamic, inclusive, and passionate, the Global Lyme Alliance is mindful of the urgency of the escalating public health care crisis surrounding tick-borne diseases. As part of their efforts to raise funds to support much-needed research, Lyme Global Alliance has embarked on a quest to develop diagnostic tool as a first step towards eradicating diseases and working with others in the tick-borne disease community nationwide and globally. The new Global Lyme Alliance seeks to raise public awareness through education and creating a unified voice for advocacy regarding the current epidemic of Lyme disease in order to make a real difference. So please join us today with fantastic David Roth down in New York City.
Hi, Katina. It's so good to be here. Thanks. Thanks for having me on again.
Oh, it's my pleasure, David. I always love visiting with you. You have such current information for us, and I so admire the work that you've been doing for such a long time. Partnered in the early days with Stacy Grodin from Turn the Corner Foundation, you all ran a fantastic organization, Tick-Borne Disease Alliance, done so much advocacy work. It was my honor when we followed John Donnelly with his trek across America with Bite Back for the Cure, and I've participated with you beautiful people at some fantastic awareness events. And so now there's new changes in the air.
New changes.
Yes,
new, very exciting stuff.
Tell us what's happened, how you got to Lyme Global. Tell us.
Well, you know, one of the things that we have always stood for at Tick-Borne Disease Alliance is working with other groups. And it's so critical. I mean, there are, and I didn't really know this until we were going through the process on the federal legislative effort, which maybe we'll talk about later, just how many Lyme groups there are. And there's something like 150 or 200 Lyme groups across the country. And, you know, the challenge that I think we have is having our voice heard above the noise. And when you have a lot of efforts that are uncoordinated and sort of splintered, and frankly, oftentimes, and we don't talk about it publicly, oftentimes working at odds against each other within the community for reasons that, that don't always make sense, you know, your voice gets diminished. And so we at TBDA have always said we've got to find a way to put a group together that seeks to have all of these groups, or as many that want to, join forces in a coordinated manner in order to, you know, really make a difference. And so in an effort to do that, as well as, frankly, to focus on long-term supporting critically needed research, we began many years ago to talk to what back then was Time for Lyme. Ultimately, they changed their name to Lyme Research Alliance, and we ended up merging with them finally about a month ago. This was after, frankly, years of talking about getting together, and then last May of 2014, we announced that we were actually going to merge these two groups. It took up until literally like a month ago to get the final regulatory approval, and it's an incredibly arcane system to get two groups like this to merge. We had to get Attorney General approval, if you can believe that, in New York State.
Wow.
And that took literally till like a month ago. So we're finally merged now. We're finally coming together as a group. I am super excited about it. People are terrific at the group that we're merging with. And, you know, we all know this, that ultimately science is going to make the difference. We need desperately to have a better diagnostic tool. We need desperately to have, you know, better treatments and hopefully ultimately a cure for these terrible diseases. So this is a way for us to take our group, which was, you know, very much focused on awareness and education, which I think are critically important for reasons we can go into, and merge them with a group that was, you know, wholly focused on research, you know, in order to, you know, to advance the cause as quickly as we can.
Yeah, that's really great. I mean, you're really marrying the two sides that are most necessary in this really exploding public health crisis. And also, just for our listeners, Lyme Research Alliance, they've been based out of Connecticut for many years, right?
Correct.
Right. And here you all are in New York. So you've really grabbed this big Northeast sector and really united your very powerful forces together. I think it's dynamic, David, that you've done this.
Yeah, it's really, you know, has terrific potential. It's early days for us working as a group together, but I'm really, really excited. I think it makes a complete, you know, just it makes so much sense for these groups to get together. We had common goals, you know, detecting, eradicating tick-borne diseases and making the public, the government, and the medical community aware of the problem. We've got the ability to scale, and this allows us, you know, for instance, to hire a really professional staff, which is something that never has existed, I don't think, in the in this space. Everybody, it's been a you know, volunteer armies across the country, which is incredibly necessary and important. But, you know, having professional staff and the ability to take this not from, you know, from a you know, we'll, this year will probably be a $3 to $4 million a year in terms of revenue organization. What we need to do is we need to create, you know, a Susan G. Komen type organization for this disease. And so having professional staff allows you to grow even faster and even larger. Having one voice, you know, unified voice in the tri-state area is going to be incredibly powerful, I think. You know, being what I hope will be a poster child for coordination within the Lyme community, you know, community cooperation. Hopefully we're setting an example for other Lyme groups to either join us or at least to begin to talk about coordinating things with each other. Both groups have you know, incredible desire to focus on research, you know, this just allows us to, I think, to be stronger in really helping the cause. Our mission statement, I think, sums it up. This is the Global Lyme Alliance, conquering tick-borne disease through research and education.
Conquering tick-borne disease through research and education. That's great. That's a wonderful statement. And I'm so proud of you for coming together, these two incredible groups. Both of you on your own as groups raise $1 million+ every year. And now here you are together. And as you said, unified with professional staff, this is going to probably bring it all up to the level that, you know, as you said, we need to move forward. You know, it still blows my mind, which we'll talk more about when we come back after the station break, that here we are, the private sector, having to make this happen regarding this exploding healthcare crisis. But I think this is fantastic, David. Congratulations on the merger. It's really timely and so important.
Yeah, appreciate it. We're really very excited about it. And, you know, the name of the game is acceleration. We have got to accelerate finding the cures, finding better diagnostic tests, getting the public aware of what's going on, getting Congress and state legislatures aware of what's going on, and accelerate, you know, a path towards eradicating these terrible diseases.
I agree with you, acceleration. So, David, it's time for our first station break. We've got a lot of ground to cover. So, audience, stay with us. We're going to be right back. This is Katina Makris with Limelight Radio.
Hoffman is the hottest psychic with the warmest heart and the host of the hit show Angels and Answers. A renowned psychic, medium, spiritual life coach, and an entertaining motivational speaker, Artie has helped over 15,000 people with his amazing intuitive gifts, his passion, and his humor. Call 877-ANGEL-02 to schedule a personal reading or to have your own psychic Artie party. That's 877-ANGEL-02. And visit ArtieHoffman.com and Angels and Answers on Facebook. Tune in each Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 Eastern Time on Transformation Talk Radio to Limelight Radio with Katina Makris. This is an inspirational, cutting-edge radio show educating worldwide listeners on a diversity of Lyme disease-related topics. Each week, Katina will interview some of the world's leaders in health, wellness, spirituality, and human potential. For more information, visit LimelightRadio.com.
Tune in to The Jen Royster Show, intuitive guidance to inspire your life, each Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific and 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This amazing show is an inspirational hour that will take you on an epic metaphysical journey to discover the spiritual approach to life's greatest challenges. Dr. Jen is an internationally known intuitive counselor, spiritual teacher, and energy healer. Call in for intuitive readings and visit JenRoyster.com for more information.
What if there was no right or wrong way to be a great parent? Join Access Consciousness Facilitator Glenna Rice as she and Dr. Pat invite you to be the questionable parents you truly are and empower you to know and give the awareness required to create ease and joy with your children. Join Dr. Pat and Glenna as they focus on parenting for the modern family. Tune in every month to the Dr. Pat Show on air and online at TransformationTalkRadio.com.
To Limelight Radio, everyone. This is Katina Makris, and we're visiting today with David Roth from Global Lyme Alliance, which has created a fantastic merger between the Tick-Borne Disease Alliance out of New York and the Lyme Research Alliance from Connecticut. And now we've got Global Lyme Alliance, which is a worldwide oriented organization to help all of us with tick-borne diseases and this exploding public healthcare crisis that we are really in the crosshairs of right now at the peak of spring. Ticks are everywhere and Lyme disease is on everyone's mind. So David, welcome back. I'd love to get some perspective from you because, you know, you're so involved at so many levels of what's going on with Lyme disease. You're involved politically, you're involved with awareness, you're involved with research, you're involved with the average everyday person. Can you give me some perspective of what you see is going on with the Lyme disease situation currently here in the United States?
Sure. A small question like that, I'll try to tackle it as expeditiously as I can.
Right, now we'll come in with an angle, right?
Yeah. Let's start with the fact that, you know, I, like many people who are involved in this, get phone calls on a regular basis. I probably take, you know, anywhere from 5 to 10 calls a week from people who are either sick or think they're sick or have kids who are going through this. I would tell you that the pace is increasing. I am seeing more and more cases, just on an anecdotal level. Obviously, the CDC is, you know, has increased their estimate from, you know, the 35,000 that was being reported to above 300,000. I think that you will find there's a reasonable likelihood, from what I'm hearing, that they may increase that even more, their estimates. And you know, I frankly had expected them to come out with something already, but I think that that's possible. And, you know, just anecdotally, I'm getting the sense that more and more people are dealing with this. Obviously, we don't have good diagnostic tests, so we can't really do real epidemiological studies that indicate exactly how many people are dealing with either the acute form of these diseases or the chronic symptoms that we all know can come from these diseases.
Right.
I would also say that I think we're going to find that every year, like the last couple years, we're learning about new pathogens that are found in ticks. So the prevalence with which people are being bit is going up. Global warming is not going to help that. It's going to only make it worse, whether or not you believe in global warming or not. Kind of what's going on now is the tick prevalence throughout the country is expanding pretty quickly. The types of diseases that people are going to be impacted by, we're going to find out every year that there are more and more bad things that come from being bit by a tick. All of those bad things that get bit by a tick are creating an incredibly complex set of symptoms and medical challenges for people who are being bit. So I would tell you that from the perspective of the disease, it's not a pretty picture. I think it's bad and getting worse. I would say it's also getting more and more complicated and more difficult for doctors who like to sort of categorize people as, you know, it's like if you walk in and you have a bone sticking out of your arm, it's pretty clear what's wrong with you. If you walk in with the symptoms that we all have experienced, it's really tough for the average doctor to understand what's going on. So all of that is, you know, creating taking a bad situation and I think making it worse. So that is, there's a depressing element, unfortunately, to what I'm going to say.
It's pretty intense. It's pretty intense, isn't it?
I think it's very intense. And I think, you know, it's also intense as a patient and terrible for a patient because of, you know, the just the degree of acrimony and politics around getting diagnosed. You know, we spent a lot of time, I spent a lot of personal time this past year getting the bill in New York State passed, I think serves patients' rights to treatment by ensuring that doctors who treat outside of the IDSA guidelines don't get prosecuted and persecuted by the OPMC, which is the regulatory body.
Thank you for making that happen in New York. Thank you.
Well, it wasn't me. It was a massive
combination.
You know, I was just involved, I'm happy that I was part of the process, and I think it will do good
do.
over Over the long term, I don't think it's a cure-all, because I think there's still ways that these doctors can be attacked. But hopefully it will do more. It'll do some good going forward in terms of allowing doctors to feel free to at least explore, in an area of very uncertain science, you know, alternative ways of trying to get their patients better, which I can assure you most doctors want to get their patients better. Overall, I would say it's a challenging picture, but there are reasons to be hopeful. On the technology side, there are more and more groups that are focused now on diagnostics. I think that having the CDC come out and say 300,000, that's a much bigger marketplace.
And, yeah. That's bigger than the peak of the AIDS. That's bigger than the peak of the AIDS epidemic, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, I on the one hand, I just want to sort of comment on something you said a little earlier, which was, isn't it a shame that, that the government is, not doing as much and we need the private sector? I would tell you a few things. One, the government is strapped for cash across the board.
Yeah.
So diseases across the board, we can point at other diseases, and I can assure you that we are not getting enough money for these diseases. And a big part of the push at the federal level is ultimately to figure out how do we get the government to sort of, if you just increased the amount that they're funding today, which is like 25 million, you just add one more zero, which is a rounding error in the government's context, that would have a massive difference on kind of what's being done in the research field. So I can assure you we're not getting our fair share, but even with other disease sets across the board, funding is way down, and it's very challenging across all disease sets, and everybody's sort of competing for the what I would call ever diminishing dollars within the government context.
Yeah.
So the private sector is critically important. I am I'm a private sector guy.
I believe
in the private sector, and I believe that there is a marketplace, that the private sector should be interested in.
And we can be influential. We can make things happen, right?
Correct. And so, it's about bringing, and I believe, a big part of the awareness push, which we'll talk about later, is about attracting capital, whether it's from high net worth individuals, the government, or private industry, to come together to help solve these very complicated problems.
Well, I like that. I like that understanding that you have, because you do come from the business world, and the business world offers enormous skills and strategy to a situation like this that's involves health, but we can use your talents and background of so many talented people to, work on this equation. It really is like a math equation that has to be solved at multi-facets. So thank you for that big lens picture there, David, of what's going on. And all the way down to the personal, as you said, fielding new patients and confused every day. Me too. I speak to people just in my little town. Someone every day speaks to me about the illness.
I'm sure you are. We all become, in a sense, lightning rods for anybody in our communities or who can find ways to reach out to us to figure out what they're going through. It's God's work. I sort of feel like I have to do it, and I'm sure you feel the same.
Yeah, I can't really stop anymore. I made that decision a while ago not to sit on the sidelines, because it devastated my life, and I didn't want others to have to go through such suffering. And as you said, once you step up to the bat and hit that first ball at the plate, like, you're not going to get out of the game, right?
Look, we are so lucky that you do what you do. And we have so limited resources as a community of what I would call current and future and frankly past sufferers. And we have so few people that are willing to make it an important part of their life. So this is an incredibly important thing that you do.
Thank you, David. Thank you for telling me that.
And truthfully, one of the things that I have struggled with is that very often people who have been sick for long periods of time, when they get better, they sort of want to get as far away from it as they can. And, you know, we desperately need more people to come forward and talk about these diseases. So I encourage, you know, all of your listeners, either in their own way or they can reach out to us at GLA, at the Global Lyme Alliance. There are many, many ways that you can get involved and help the cause.
I agree 100%. I use this analogy that one droplet of rain does not feel like very much, but a million droplets of rain creates a storm. And if all of our voices
are... By the way, that's why you're a writer and I'm not.
Imagery. So, David, just before we go to station break, what's the website address now for GLA?
I believe it's globallymealliance.org.
Okay.
But, you know, and I, we,
you're so brand new right now.
Yeah. We're so brand new. I'm looking at what I just realized is an off-site, site, meaning it's may not be for the public yet.
Right. It's right. It's on the verge.
On the verge. Yeah.
So anyway, okay. Well, listen, audience, stay with us. We're going to take a quick station break here, and then we're going to come back and visit more with David Roth from Global Lyme Alliance. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Encapsulations is committed to producing the most complete line of research-based nutritional supplements, from fish oil to probiotics to multivitamins and more. Available through qualified health professionals and community pharmacists, finished products are pure and hypoallergenic to optimize the long-term health of all patients, even the most sensitive. With Pure Encapsulations, you can rest assured that you're getting the purest and highest quality nutritional supplements available. Ask a qualified healthcare practitioner about Pure Encapsulations today and discover why it's the supplement brand of choice for healthcare professionals worldwide. For more information, please visit www.pureencapsulations.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. These products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Each Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 Eastern Time on Transformation Talk Radio to Limelight Radio with Katina Macris. This is an inspirational, cutting-edge radio show educating worldwide listeners on a diversity of Lyme disease-related topics. Each week, Katina will interview some of the world's leaders in health, wellness, spirituality, and human potential. For more information, visit limelightradio.com.
Tune in to Sheer Alchemy with Leslie Fontaine on TransformationTalkRadio.com and get ready to stir up your passions, remove your blocks, and shift into an entirely new existence. Speaker, teacher, channel, clairvoyant, Leslie Fontaine is a transformation catalyst who channels a powerful energy from Source to catapult listeners into living the life they were born to live. Whether it's shifting from scarcity to abundance, from emotional pain into joy, or from illness into health, Leslie will help you step into the true essence and power of all that you are with the help of the Ascended Masters and Archangels. You will not be the same. Visit TransformationTalkRadio.com for show dates and times, and LeslieFontaine.com to say yes to explosive abundance.
Slow down, you crazy child. You're so ambitious for a... Welcome back to Limelight Radio, everyone. Today we've been having a fantastic conversation with David Roth, formerly Tick-Borne Disease Alliance, now excited with the new merger of Lyme Research Alliance into a fantastic expanding group, LymeGlobalAlliance.org. So, David,
just to make it technically correct, yes. merger into.
Oh, merger with. Thank you for correcting me. Thank you. So, David, there's so much you've got ahead here, work that you all are doing that's really tremendous. It's so cutting edge for all of us in the Lyme disease community. Can we talk about the two areas that are of interest to me and I think to our audience is what's going on in research and diagnostics and then, of course, what's going on with the awareness movement?
Sure. So let's just start by saying there's more interest in this disease, I think, than there's ever been within the research community. But it is tough because if you think about it, you know, there isn't a lot of money. There's, you know, very limited amounts of money at the federal government for this, you know, for these diseases. And the private sector, you know, groups like ours, you know, we're, I think, the leading group, and we're not funding that much research either, just by definition. We're not raising as much as we have to, and therefore we're not funding as much research as we need to. So, we desperately, I think, need to find ways to bring other researchers, other technologies to bear on this sector. You know, at the end of the day, money is the only way you're going to do that. It's a thing that I think about all the time. How do we attract more money to this sector? But at the end of the day, research is the answer. And so when we were at, TBDA, frankly, we were constantly talking about how can we support research? How can we get involved in research? And this was my perspective, was given how much money we were raising, I had very little interest in, you know, creating yet another medical board and granting process, and sort of said to people, you know, I'd rather give my money to one of the other groups that's doing this kind of work or find a merger partner.
Yeah.
And that's what we ended up doing. So ultimately, the only way we get out of these problems is by is through the science. And the reason we merged with the, you know, at the time they were called Lyme Research Alliance, was they really were and have been for, you know, 10 plus years, the leader in the private sector, the leader in the nonprofit world, focused on supporting research into diagnostics, treatments, therapies to deal with these diseases. So they've been, you know, have a very, very strong, medical board, you know, with terrific people. They've got a terrifically strong granting process, and I should be using the word we now, now that we're merged with them, and, you know, have done tremendous work with, you know, some of the leading people within the research world, you know, people like John Alcott and Ben Luft and Steve Schutzer and Armin Aladini, who's somewhat new to the field, people like Karen Newell, Ying Zhang.
Yeah, a lot of great. Yeah, a lot of
Kim
great
Lewis.
Research. Kim Lewis, right.
I don't think that Lyme Research Alliance, which was, you know, a terrific group, but wasn't as focused on awareness. They didn't do a great job, and I think they would admit this. The people who came from that side on our board, they didn't do a great job of telling the world how much great work they've done. So one of the things we'll start to do, I think, and this is all again with a goal towards attracting more capital, letting people know how great the work has been.
We should do a separate radio interview on that, is getting this research information out there, and how can we drive people in to help, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We let's should definitely do that.
I'm thinking down the line, let's do a separate show on that. But anyway, yeah, so I mean, all this research work has really been happening, and it's starting to target, it sounds like now. Focus.
It is. I mean, I would say there's still so much that needs to be done. But, you know, again, our goal is by bringing these two groups together, it's all about how do we create a bigger, ever-growing budget for doing more research and for, frankly, for guiding the research in the direction that we as a community need, and we as a community of sufferers and people who represent people who are currently suffering or in the future might be suffering. You know, how do we focus the researchers through the use of providing them with capital to find better diagnostics and find better treatments.
I know. You remember when we were kids, we used to get that annual tuberculosis screening test.
Yeah, we need something that is cost-effective, mass-produced, you know,
right.
that is easy to understand. I mean, how many times have you spoken to friends of yours or people you know who've called you and said, what does this Western blot mean? It's a joke of how subjective the whole process of getting diagnosed is.
It is.
So to me, the linchpin has always been, you've heard me talk about this before, we desperately need a better diagnostic test. We need a diagnostic test not just from a technology side, but also from an acceptance side. Like, we need a test that's, you know, cost-effective, mass-produced, you know, easily accessed, but then one that's, you know, this is the part that's not just about the technology. We need a test that is accepted by the medical community, the government, insurance companies. We need a test that allows us to phase the disease, so we know if somebody's acutely ill or if they're in the process of longer-term symptoms, just like they have in cancer, right? I mean, unfortunately, you get cancer, you find out what stage you're in, and we need the same thing. And we need it for not just for Lyme, but for other tick-borne diseases so that there can be either a chip or something that a multi-assay array that allows doctors quickly to test for a whole variety of diseases so that they can quickly treat. Because
right.
we know that the longer you wait, the worse it gets.
Right. And ticks really now, as you pointed out earlier in this interview, they're carrying so many microbes. They're little cesspools, and they bring out parasites and viruses and other bacterias. And it's, you know, years and years ago, I can remember as a kid, it was just Rocky Mountain spotted fever that we were frightened about. But yeah, they carry everything. And yeah, the diagnostics, we've got a big mountain to climb, but it sounds like we're pointed in the right direction, which
I think we are. I mean, I think there's a lot of groups now that are working on this problem, and I think that we are. I don't believe we're that far away from having better diagnostics.
Yeah.
I think we're far away from having. I think it will take time to get the kind of acceptance that will need to occur in order for that technology, which is likely out there or soon to be out there, to actually start helping people. Because to do that, we need, we need a test that, like your blood test when you walk into a doctor's office, it's just given by every doctor, and they all know what it means. They all know how to interpret it.
Right.
We're a ways away from that, but that's the hope, and that's where we want
to
go.
The
other reason, the other reason to have a better diagnostic test is, you know, as I mentioned, we can't do the epidemiological studies to prove just how big the body is of people who've been affected by these diseases. That is critically important. It's critically important that we show the government how bad a problem this is so that they start to focus on it more important, put more money in it, that we show, you know, venture capitalists and biotech and pharma how big a marketplace, and there's nothing wrong with, you know, talking about it in that way. If we can get those people interested and they frankly are not interested like you and me in necessarily helping people. They're interested in things that will make the money, which is what a corporation is supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with that. But if we can convince them to become more interested, that will bring more money to the problem. So the diagnostic test is critical in all those areas. And then the last piece is, you know, without better diagnostics in terms of really understanding whether or not somebody is infected and that the symptoms that they're having are coming from that infection, we can't really, from a research standpoint, put together the groups of patients that will allow us to do research on the more challenging forms of these diseases, which are the chronic symptoms.
Yeah.
So today, it's really tough. You need a well-characterized group of people. Mm-hmm. And you can do studies on people who are, in quotes, chronic Lyme sufferers. But, you know, one of the challenges we have is that when you get bit by a tick and you get a bullseye rash, if you're lucky enough to be one of the people who gets a bullseye rash, but listen to my hypothetical, you get a bullseye rash and you get sick. We know that that illness is coming from that tick bite. As time passes, the factors involved in illness, and this is, you know, if you listen to, you know, Dr. Horowitz, who's my doctor, you know, you're familiar with this concept. Mm-hmm. The factors involved with illness get so much more complicated that it's really hard to tell exactly what is, you know, causing the illness versus a whole variety
triggered,
of other things.
Right. Right. What does it trigger in the autoimmune relay, inflammation,
correct,
cascades, all of these things? Yeah, I know it's multifaceted at that point. Well, David, you know what? I just love your thinking. You have such a great overview, and this is where your business mind comes into play in such an important way for us. And really, thank you for you know, driving this, as you said, you know, into the bigger marketplace. Big pharma, hello, insurance industry, everybody, they need to be, attracted to us. We need to attract them to us. And so if we can do all of these different pieces to attract them so they can be a participant, and so we all can work together to crack this equation and solve the problem. So thank you for, you know, your big picture and your know-how out there in the industry. It's so important.
I appreciate that. There is one thing that business is really good at. Business is really good at figuring out a need or a problem that has to be solved and figuring out how, as efficiently as possible, with the highest return on investment of time and money, you solve those problems or you meet that need.
Mm-hmm.
And so it will always be better at that, in my view, than government.
Mm-hmm.
But having said that, you know, I'm spending a lot of time on the federal legislation because I think it's critically important. I mean, we really don't know where the breakthroughs will come from. So mm-hmm. we just have to push on all sides, I think, and we need the federal government to step up and provide more capital. And that's something that, you know, I'm spending a lot of time
working on
as
too.
Well.
Yeah, that's terrific. It's so awesome. And, you know, before we run out of time today, because you and I could go on for 2 hours instead of one hour.
We could.
Yeah. We're just going to have to come back. But before we do run out of time today, can we just take at least a snapshot of some of the really worthy awareness campaign efforts that are happening in these next coming months here? You've got some things on the schedule that are really important that people can get out to and participate in.
Yeah, I mean, look, we're just, sort of consummating this merger. We only merged a month ago. And
right.
So I would say that we're, given what you've seen in the past, a little bit slower because we've had some what I would call downtime as we're making this merger happen. I think it's important first to say, why is awareness so important? Awareness is critically important because, number one, you know, we live in a world today where, you know, you and I and, you know, the Lyme support community, the Lyme community more generally, we're all super focused on this, right? We talk about it, we argue about it, we do things to support the cause. Unfortunately, we're like 0.1% of the population, and we have to recognize, I think we have to always be realistic with ourselves, 99.9% of the population out there has no clue about this disease, has no understanding of how terrible it is, has no reason to think about it. And so we've got 99.9% of the population that therefore is at risk. They don't know it, but they're at risk.
Right.
So one thing that awareness does is teaches people about prevention, teaches people about being their own advocate, you know, when they do get sick, and making sure that they understand, you know, what are the symptoms, that they understand that the diagnostic tests are, that they're unreliable, and that they have to really be their own best advocate. So there's a part of awareness that's just about trying to, trying to keep people healthy. And if they become unhealthy, giving them the means to be their own best advocate, you know, to go out and try to
right.
make themselves healthy. But there's a much broader picture in terms of awareness that relates to everything we were saying earlier. In my opinion, science will be the way out of this, but you can't do the science without a bunch of money. And so the awareness is critically important to find those three groups, to get those three groups that I mentioned earlier, high net worth and frankly, you know, not just high net worth individuals, but individuals giving money to try to support research. Number two, the government, convincing the government that this is an important issue. And number three, getting the private sector focused. Without awareness, you can't do any of those, right? You can't
right.
find that needle in a haystack person who wants to support research in a bigger way. You can't get Congress people and senators focused on these issues. They only focus on things that will, you know, and I don't mean to sound cynical, but they're going to focus on things that interest them. But part of that is driven by what their constituents, you know, i.e. voters, right,
mm-hmm.
people who vote for them and keep them in office, mm-hmm. They're only going to care about things that they care about. So we don't, you know, we have a lot of people, but it's really not that many in the scheme of the overall country
mm-hmm.
who are focused on this these diseases. We need everybody else. We need all the people out there who are scared that their kid is going to go out and get sick by playing in the lawn.
Right.
Those people, all the people who don't know about these diseases need to learn about these diseases. They need to be scared, unfortunately, and I wish there were a better way to do it, but in every disease set, this is sort of how things how progress has been made. People need to be scared. There's reasons to be scared about these diseases, and they need to be made aware of them and made scared so that they, in turn, will demand from their legislators that more money be put into this. And then the last thing, obviously, is awareness to get the private sector more focused on this. So in my opinion, awareness is a critical piece of stopping the cycle of illness, but it's also a critical piece in kind of everything else we're trying to do in terms of raising capital to bring to the research field.
Well, cheer, because I'm right there with you on the awareness campaign. That's my great passion, is to wake up the world to this story and help us all hold hands and join forces together to move this in the right direction, just the way you're working so dedicatedly here in so many directions, David. Unbelievable what you all have really coalesced to move this forward. And I know you've got some 5K walks coming up. There's a golf tournament.
We have a bunch of walks, and I would encourage people as well. We have John Donnelly works for us full time now. He runs these walks. For those who don't know him, can mm-hmm. take a look at the old TBDA website or Facebook page and take a look at the ride, you know, how we all got introduced to John Donnelly, you know, the ride
right.
across the country that he did. Those videos are all out there, and I think they remain you know, a testament to inspiration and hope and, you know, and focus on these illnesses. But we've got a bunch of those kind of rides going on, and we've got, you know, a lot of things in the media that are coming out. Just yesterday, Heather Thompson, who's a great old friend of TBDA's, has come out, and she's, you know, promoting Lyme Awareness Month for us. She is one of the New York housewives, and, you know, is somebody who's been a terrific spokesperson. Obviously, we're starting more and more to hear just the numbers. It's the way it's going to work. More and more people who are famous getting sick, and we don't want anybody to get sick, but this is helpful, you know, for lack of a better way to put it, for the cause. When somebody like Avril Lavigne gets sick, more and more people become aware of this, this issue.
Well, they already have a major publicity, you know, surrounding them, so they just attract that many more people to our story. As I said, we want to attract, right? We want to attract attention, and we want to attract resources, and we want to attract others to join us and be a, you know, move this forward. So if it takes a star power or an athlete or someone in a powerful position or a public position, that's going to help our attraction.
I agree. And look, one other thing I want to mention, just because we haven't, and one of the reasons we haven't, it's not something that either TBDA or LRA were involved with, but I do think is critically important, which is, you know, mass action. Things like the Mayday Project and, you know, others who are going out and being activists, I think is I think it's a critically important piece of it as well. These are, you know, just because of the role that I play in my business, I can't be that person. I can't be the person who is, you know, going out there and protesting and putting myself at risk of getting arrested and all the things that, that one does when they're in that. But I can assure you that my heart is with those people, because I think that if you think about how AIDS, how we, a difference was made in AIDS, it was a combination of mass action and good science. You know, we're on the good science piece, but mass action, I think, is also critically important.
Really good point to make there, David. Like the one now, too, that Melissa Bell and the others started, the Lyme Disease Challenge.
I you know what, I apologize for not even mentioning it. What a terrific thing they've done. You know, I kicked myself that we didn't do it. It's and she's doing such a I mean, the website and the Facebook page, everything is so terrific. I think they're going to be very successful, and that's going to be a very, very good thing, and everybody should go out and do it.
Yeah, global awakening, really. I'm seeing Facebook pictures, everything, Twitter posts from Australia, all over. People take a bite out of Lyme, Lyme Disease Challenge. I've got to put a plug in for Melissa Bell and her great challenge campaign.
Yes, I think that's it's a terrific campaign.
Yeah, so listen, David, I can't believe it, but our hour has just zoomed by.
They always do.
I know.
We always have a lot to talk about.
You and I do. We get going here, and we just have so much ground to cover. You're a fantastic guest. I love it. You've shared so much with us today. Thank you so much for coming on air and, you know, informing us about the merger and all of that's happening and all your hard work. It's tremendous. Thank you so much.
I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to talk, and it's always a pleasure to speak with you, and I encourage people. I just, in the break, did go up and make sure our site is up, globallymealliance.org, and, you know, please come visit us. This is what they call, I forget, just a splash page. This is not the final site, which is in development, but it'll give you an opportunity to reach out to us or to John Donnelly if you want to get involved. And, you know, we didn't even talk about, maybe next time we'll talk about this terrific junior board that that John put together. There's a lot of things to talk about.
Yeah, you're going to have to come back. So we're going to do another visit together, you and I, and share some more information. And also, I will get John on with me, too, and we will talk about some of the events coming up that people can participate around the country, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Syracuse. You've got things going on all over.
That would be terrific. And, you know, the goal of those is to find ways for us to work with people across the country. And, you know, the way we structure them, if anybody has interest in doing one, you know, the local partner that works on it gets more of the revenue than we do out of it, and it's a way for us to get our message through, meet more people that are out there, and find people across the country to work with.
Yes, thank you. It's such great work. So, David Roth, thank you so much for joining me today on Limelight Radio. It's been a pleasure, as always, to visit with you.
Great pleasure for me as well. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. So, audience, join us next week. This show and all shows are archived forever at limelightradio.com and also on iTunes. So, thank you, everyone. It's been a great show, and we'll see you next week. This is Katina.
You've been listening to Limelight Radio with Katina Makris. Tune in each Wednesday at 1 Pacific Time, 4 Eastern Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Get ready for some of the most provocative conversation with leaders in health, wellness, spirituality, and human potential. If you've missed any part of this hit radio show, visit LimelightRadio.com. That's LimelightRadio.com. We'll see you next week on Limelight Radio with Katina Makris. Then I go to my